welcome. My name is Brett Cease. I'll be hosting Two Citizens Climate University tonight. We're lucky to have the topic be fossil fuels and climate change, human health connections. And a quick introduction both for Dr. Byron and for Dr. Mahoney. Dr. Robert Byron is an internist who works at the Bighorn Valley Health Center in Hardin, Montana, and is a hospitalist at St. Vincent's Healthcare in Billings. After having worked for two decades on the Crow Indian Reservation for Indian Health Service, a former governor of the Montana chapter of the American College of Physicians, Dr. Byron and his wife, Dr. Lori Byron, both strong advocates for addressing climate change, and particularly as relates to the public health and environmental justice aspects, co-chair CCL's health team. Thanks so much for being on tonight, Dr. Byron. We also have Dr. Cynthia Mahoney, who is a physician educator, and much of her career has been spent in private practice in the East Bay San Francisco region, working to heal many individual and often critically ill patients. Her current goal is to help improve the health of many more people by working to heal the climate, and she's been involved in climate issues since 2005, now focusing on educating people, health practitioners, and policymakers about the critical connection between climate and human health. Thank you for being on the line tonight as well, Dr. Mahoney. I'll pass it to you, Rob, and from there, we'll take it to have you drive the first half of the deck.
On behalf of the CCL health team, thank you for this opportunity to present. Cynthia and I are the messengers tonight, but the work that's gone into this has been on the part of a lot of members of the CCL health team. So this is not an individual effort. Our goal tonight are to recognize the connections between our changing climate, fossil fuel air pollution, and the human health impact. Also, to prepare your own personal message to communicate with legislators, public officials, and the larger public, and also to make you aware of the many major medical societies that now urge climate action, which also helps us in terms of our message to legislators. Our agenda tonight will start with the climate change impact on human health, and then follow that with some information on fossil fuel health impacts, including the costs in terms of dollars, which Dr. Mahoney will enlighten us on later. We hope to have time to work on our personal messages with a short breakout at the end of the session with virtual chat rooms that Brett will instruct us on, and then has time for question and answers. And we'll end it, we'll leave you with some health team resources as well as this webinar, which will be available to everybody. The main points from tonight: one, climate change is a human health problem now, not something in the distant future. It will get worse. Health is a great way to connect and message on the need for climate action. Also, the major organizations in the United States support action on climate by decreasing fossil fuel use and putting a price on carbon. The connection between global warming, fossil fuel, and health is extraordinarily strong and is evidence-based. Clean energy has both immediate health effects by eliminating fossil fuel and cost benefit, in that the health benefits will offset the cost of that transition. First of all, our free test. Which of these conditions are associated with air pollution now? Asthma, heart disease and stroke, premature birth, autism, dementia, and I will say cancer in general, not just lung cancer. And for those who aren't aware, all of these and more medical conditions are associated with air pollution. Now, let's be clear. That does not mean if our atmosphere was pristine and had no pollution, these would all go away. But all of these are made worse by air pollution. And we hope to give you some evidence of that in our talk. But things that we'd like you to think about as we're giving the presentation of your personal message. We know that's what makes a difference when we talk to others. And that is, just as an example, climate change or fossil fuel air pollution affects my community by what? Wildfires, increased asthma. And Representative Smith or Senator Jones, what are you doing to protect my community's health from those wildfires? And B is another example, slightly different, that you can use. Just an example of what we all feel like. This is from the clinical world, but it fits for climate change. So what fits your busy schedule better? Exercise in an hour a day or being dead 24 hours a day? That's kind of how we all feel regarding climate change. And this is what climate change is about, which is not temperature, not weather. It's about people and about how that's going to impact us.
One of the mistakes people make about climate change is saying that the planet is at stake.
Is it the last chance to save the planet from climate change?
Tens of thousands of activists warning climate change is destroying the Earth.
Biggest cause in Hollywood is saving the Earth, you know, climate change and all that.
That's not really the right way to think about it. Earth has gone through immense climate changes many, many times before, in some cases leading to mass extinctions. But life persisted. Mammals evolved from reptiles and primates from mammals. They stood up and walked out of Africa, eventually reaching the corners of every continent. But only after well over 100,000 years of wandering did the real human innovation happen, when 12,000 years ago we stopped foraging and started farming. Agriculture meant villages, cities, society, government, the birth of civilization. But why did it take so long for humans to take control of their food? Well, if you look at this chart of global temperature change going back 100,000 years, you might notice something special about the last 10,000 years. That's when the climate settled into a period of unusual stability. It was on this ledge that human society developed, where reliable seasons fed more and more people, where knowledge accumulated and science began. Until eventually, inventors created machines that could unleash unimaginable growth and mobility. All they needed was fuel to burn, and they found it in the form of ancient forests, buried under dirt and compacted over 300 million years. With these coal deposits, humans unearthed tons and tons of carbon that had been locked away long before our species appeared. And that's how we began to disrupt the climate that birthed us, the climate that our food systems and infrastructure are built upon. After 10,000 years of temperatures that varied only within about 1 degree Celsius, scientists now say we're on track for 3 degrees of warming by the end of the century if we don't change course. Humans have been around for 0.004% of Earth's history. And of all of human history, the 200,000 years since our species began, we've had agriculture for just 5% of that time. We've had electricity for 0.07% of that time. The simple truth about climate change is that it isn't new to the planet, but civilization is. And here's what's even newer. In the past 100 years, the number of people alive has quadrupled, and thus so has the capacity for suffering. So slowing down climate change isn't about saving the planet, it's about us, about our vulnerability to a level of climate disruption that human civilization has simply never seen before.
In 2009, the Lancet Commission on Climate Change stated that climate change is the biggest global health threat of the 21st century. The impacts will be felt globally. In 2015, they changed the message a little bit. The same commission stated tackling climate change could be the greatest global health opportunity of the 21st century. And we agreed. Every change we make will benefit us. The healthcare community has been a little slow to get on board, but over the past couple of years, that has changed dramatically. The American Public Health Association declared 2017 as the year of climate and health, leading up to their conference in early November, where there were hundreds of talks related to climate and health. In March of this year, the Medical Society Consortium on Climate and Health became public and now represents over 600,000 physicians in the United States and almost all of the major physician professional organizations, and very much urges for action on climate change and is working very hard to make that happen. And in November, five major nursing organizations joined the Alliance for Nurse and Health and Environment along the same lines. So there's lots of movement within the healthcare community urging climate action. And this is a simple message bot developed by Ed Mybeck, who now works with the Medical Society Consortium. and is one of the most respected communicators relative to climate change, certainly in the U.S., if not globally. He developed this to help us get an idea. A lot of writing here, but the ideas are pretty simple. The problem is communities across the nation, climate change is harming our health now. For folks who say, so what? Does the health of any American can be harmed by climate change, but some more than others. Unless we take concerted action, those harms will get worse. And we can change that to make it sound a little negative, a little less negative and more positive, in depending on who we're speaking with. And the solutions? The most important action we can take to protect our health is to reduce heat trapping pollution by reducing energy waste and accelerating the transition to renewable energy. You'll see this again. So just to remind folks, what we anticipate with climate change, starting in the center, rising temperatures, rising sea levels, more CO2, more extreme weather. The next level out, some of those results, more severe weather, more extreme heat, increased allergens, water quality impact, and air pollution, which I'll come back to in a minute. And then around the outside, the specific health effects, heat-related illness and death, injuries and fatalities from extreme weather events, respiratory disease, more infectious disease, malnutrition. Let me address the air pollution specifically, because air pollution is the cause of climate change, but also climate change increases air pollution. At any given level of air pollution, as temperatures go up, the ozone level also goes up, which Dr. Mahoney will address more later. And this is just an example of what's expected over the rest of the century based on climate change. I don't want to dwell too much on the details because these will be available to you, but basically look for the number of days over 95 degrees, which is the main thing that's important in terms of high temperatures. We see the effects of some of the heat waves that we've had. 2006, the California heat wave, daytime temperatures were in excess of 100 for 2 weeks. And it's that cumulative effect of high temperatures that results in death and morbidity to people. And as a reminder, in 2003, the European heat wave estimated deaths were between 35,000 and 45,000 people. We see other events, that extreme weather events, that add to problems. Flooding from hurricanes, from flooding and snow melt. And wildfires may not be an extreme weather event, but they're certainly impacted by prolonged droughts as well as the increased temperatures. Just an example taken from Puerto Rico from the recent Hurricane Maria, and it's worth noting that over 2.5 months after the hurricane, still large parts of the population do not have power and do not have reliable water. I showed some examples from Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans in 2005. Our annual fire season is 78 days longer compared to just the 1970s. Six times as many acres are burned, and this is from about 3 to 4 years ago. What we're all seeing is California is still an inferno, and even Montana this summer put these numbers to shame. The next slide shows a satellite view of the United States, and obviously there are a lot of clouds in here, but most of that across the central U.S. is smoke from wildfires in the west from a couple of years ago. The impacts are far-ranging. Looking at some of the cumulative effects, this graph shows on the left the 10-year total fatalities in the United States from extreme events, heat waves over 1,200. Tornadoes and hurricanes, we don't know if climate change will impact them in terms of numbers, but we certainly know now that hurricanes are made more intense. In fact, just this week at the American Geophysical Union conference in New Orleans, two separate papers attributed anywhere from 20% up to 38% more rain to Hurricane Harvey from climate change. And then on the right, some of the dollar values from hurricanes up through 2013, $392 billion. That will be a lot more after this year. Next slide, I'm not going to go over, but some details that you can look at later for food and waterborne diseases, just showing that they increase after extreme precipitation events, as well as after droughts. And then the next slide, just some examples of what's happening. Increased numbers of red tides, lots of poisonous algal blooms across the U.S. And the picture on the top, the green water, is from Toledo, where they had to shut down their water sources for several days because of algal contamination. Worldwide, about a third of the population gets their food from the sea. Up to this point, about a third to a fourth of the CO2 that we're putting in the air is absorbed by the ocean, with the result that it becomes more acidic. And upwards of 90% of the heat is being absorbed, the result being that it's getting warmer. What that's resulted in is the temperature changes. Over 50% of the coral reefs worldwide are either bleached or in danger. And also, a lot of the smaller animals, particularly the plankton that have shells, are not able to make their shells as well because of the increased acidity, which is going to disrupt the food chain. We expect increased droughts and water scarcity, which will result in decline in agricultural and livestock yields. This will threaten food and water security, and huge numbers of climate refugees. And then what many of us expect to be one of the greatest impacts is worsening malnutrition. Increased temperatures not only reduce productivity, but they also result in decreased protein content in the grains, decreased zinc and iron, and the decreased productivity, and that's independent of any water scarcity. Vector and waterborne diseases are going to increase, and this next slide shows some of the spread that we expect. West Nile virus, certainly we've seen, but Zika, dengue, chikungunya, among others. And this is a result of primarily of the spread of the vectors, the mosquitoes and other vectors that carry the diseases. And I thought it particularly interesting and poignant on this next slide. Cholera is caused by a warm water organism, but it's now warm enough in Alaska that the shellfish are contaminated by cholera, resulting in disease in fishermen and others. And in the United States, we've not seen large outbreaks of tropical diseases yet, but these two charts demonstrate the current range of Aedes aegypti and the tiger mosquito on the right, both of which can carry dengue fever, malaria, and Zika, among others. So the potential is there within the United States, not just other countries. The mental health and stress-related disorders go up. As temperature increases, people become more violent. Suicide increases, homicide increases. After extreme weather events, PTSD or post-traumatic stress disorder, anxiety is common. And then we know less about the problems, but anticipate more after situations such as drought, which is slow, sustained, and totally disrupts communities. All of these will impact the entire population, but certain populations are more at risk. The poor, pregnant women, children, elderly, and geographical groups, coastal peoples and rural folks are more at risk. Though it's not directly a health effect, the Department of Defense has labeled climate change as a threat multiplier. While it's not health, if there are increased wars, that certainly affects our health. And with that, I will turn it over to Dr. Mahoney. Cynthia?
We know that inaction will cost us. People are always asking, can we afford to deal with climate change? I think we have to ask, can we afford not to? Rob showed you earlier all of those billion-dollar weather events that have impacts on our health as well. And the U.S. Global Change has calculated that by 2050, if we can keep warming below 2 degrees centigrade, we will avoid thousands of deaths from all of those issues that Rob talked about, millions of lost school and work days, and the health benefits will be valued at $200 billion per year in the U.S. alone. So in other words, if we allow increased heat, if we allow all of these climate impacts to increase, we're going to see tremendous health costs that we can avoid by mitigation. Now, I want to turn away a little bit from the climate health impacts to something that's intimately related, but is actually somewhat distinct. And those are the health impacts of fossil fuels themselves. So we know that greenhouse gas emissions from fossil fuels cause climate change, and that that damages our health, as Rob showed us. But also that pollution from burning fossil fuels directly damages our health. And it's not widely known just how serious, widespread, and costly these are. And that conversely, clean energy solutions will improve our health and our economy. So let's look at what happens when we burn fossil fuels. Burning fossil fuels from transportation, from power plants for electricity, releases compounds, nitrous oxide, volatile organic compounds, VOC, sulfur dioxide, primarily from coal. And in the air, those combine to form ozone, O3, and particles. Particles, or particulate matter, is usually classified by its size. So 10 micron is considered large, 2.5 micron, microns, is fine particles, and there are even what are called ultrafine particles. And I'm going to talk more about that particulate matter in a moment, so just keep that in mind. But the ozone, we are more familiar with, and as Rob said, the hotter it gets, the more sunlight, the more ozone is produced. And breathing ozone is a major component of smog, and it's like a sunburn to our lungs. It's very irritating. And so it increases the incidence of asthma, especially in children. So how big a problem is that? Well, it's huge. We're in the middle of an epidemic of asthma. Over 30 million Americans now have asthma, almost 1 in 12. And that causes not only deaths, but tremendous day-to-day suffering, and for children, loss of time at school, loss of ability to play and grow. And, you know, I think most people think of asthma as something that you're unlucky for. Maybe you have allergies. But my daughter has asthma, and I used to think it was her own immune problem. There was a theory that maybe we were keeping kids too clean. They didn't get to play in the dirt or play with animals enough. But now we know that much of this epidemic is actually due to worsening air pollution and made even worse by wildfires and increased pollen. So how bad is our air? Well, you know, since the EPA was formed in 1970, our air has been cleaned up quite a bit. Some people think we have too many regulations, that the air is too clean now. But I would invite you to look at this American Lung Association chart that shows the cities in the country that have the worst air. Many are in California. And it turns out that over half of Americans live in counties that still have unhealthful levels of ozone or particulates. In California, that's actually 90%. So I'd invite you to look at the state of the air for the American Lung Association for your own district and see what the health of your air is. So we know that ozone is bad and contributes to asthma, but what about the particulates? Well, it turns out that 90% of the damage from air pollution is actually from the particulates, not the ozone. And they cause tremendous damage. I think it's intuitive that air pollution would harm our lungs and cause asthma and maybe even lung cancer. What's not so intuitive is how much inflammation it causes throughout the body with effects far away from our lungs. So in fact, over the last 20 years, we've learned that particulates are a major cause of heart disease and strokes. And now the latest data show that we are having 200,000 premature deaths every year, each and every year in the United States from fossil fuel air pollution. In addition to the deaths, there are hundreds of thousands of heart attacks that don't kill you, hospitalizations, ER visits for asthma, lost work and school days. So tremendous damage from fossil fuel air pollution. And not only that, we're learning about links to fetal harms, to learning and behavior problems, diabetes, even dementia. So these health effects are quite widespread. This latest study from June of 2017 in the New England Journal, which is one of the premier medical journals in the US, shows the risk of particle pollution The top map shows the areas in red, which have higher particle pollution, about 12 to 17 micrograms per meter squared. And the bottom map correlates that with mortality in the Medicare age population. And you can see there's tremendous overlap of those red areas. The areas with the highest pollution have the highest mortality. And the authors, the doctors of this study, concluded that there actually may be no safe level of exposure to PM2.5. This is a major health risk. And the risk increases the smaller the particles. So these ultra-fine particles come primarily from traffic. And these graphs show the amount of particles recorded by monitors either at the freeway itself in Los Angeles, and that's two different freeways, the I-5 and the 405. In orange, you see the particle spikes, the particle number spikes, versus the background, which is that black line. So the background is about 4,000 to 8,000 particles, which is already bad, but the spikes can be up to 90,000 particles near the freeway. Now, what's the harm? Well, these ultrafine particles are so small that when we breathe in, they can go directly through our nose up into the brain and affect the brain. And they're so small that when we breathe, they go through the lungs directly into the bloodstream. And there they travel to our brain, to our hearts, to our reproductive organs. So here's an example of what they do. Normally, our arteries, like the one on the left, show a nice smooth wall with a large open area in the center for the blood to go through. But in people who live near freeways, their arteries are more likely to look like the one on the right, where the artery wall is markedly thickened, and the lumen, the open area in the center, the white, for blood to go through is markedly narrow, and there are large particles of atherosclerosis clogging up the artery. So this is a major health impact, and we know that people who live near freeways have a much higher mortality. In fact, in Los Angeles, up to 10% of deaths are thought to be due to pollution, largely from the heavy traffic. And we talked about how these particles go directly to the brain. There's now information that particle pollution contributes to ADD, developmental delay, autism, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's, strokes, even dementia. So that's, I don't know about you, but that's pretty scary to me. And when these particles go to the placenta or reproductive organs and go through to the fetus, they also cause harm with spontaneous abortion, thousands of spontaneous abortions, preterm births, low birth weight infants throughout the U.S. each year, in addition to increased infant mortality from heat and maternal infarcts. So air pollution, fossil fuel pollution is a pro-life issue. So just a word about methane. Yes, Bessie, it was you. We all know that Carl burps and farts are methane, and that heavy meat diets contribute to climate change through methane emission. But also, as we mine methane, next slide, to extract methane, there are a lot of leaks of methane, which is the main component of natural gas. And we're now finding more and more evidence of harm from this methane, with headaches, fatigue, nosebleeds, and a marked increase in premature birth in people living next to fracking wells. Next. So the situation, I think, is very analogous to secondhand smoke from cigarettes. Just as we no longer accept the risks that come from breathing secondhand smoke, we should no longer accept the health risks from breathing fossil fuel air pollution. And when we look at the overall costs of fossil fuels to society, we have to take into account the adverse health effects and put that in when we're pricing carbon. And lastly, I would say it's worth noting that just as the tobacco industry fought tooth and nail against regulation and funded denial of tobacco's harms and addiction, The fossil fuel industry has used the same tactics, even the same ad agencies, to sow doubt and denial about climate change. And people should be aware of those tactics when they're evaluating the health costs of fossil fuels. The hidden health costs of fossil fuels include the indirect costs from climate change, and we know that CO2 is now considered an endangerment to our health. The direct costs from air pollution, ozone, and particulate matter, sorry, there's a misspelling there, as well as water pollution from fracking and mining. So I've shown you those hidden health costs or health damages, but now imagine the future powered by clean energy. Imagine what our health could be, and what is that worth to us? It's really the converse of what I've just shown you. If we move from this gray, polluted air on the left to a clean energy economy producing the air on the right, then we can prevent those 200,000 deaths. We can avoid those 180,000 heart attacks each year. And those health improvements are valued at over $500 billion every year. Do we have to wait till we have a 100% clean energy economy to get those effects? How long will they take to show? If you already have damage to your arteries, isn't it too late? Well, no. We have some experiments that have happened naturally. This was an event called Carmageddon in Los Angeles in 2011, when the freeway had to be closed down for 36 hours for repairs. And everyone was scared to death that the whole city would fall to its knees. So they called it Carmageddon. So what happened? Well, freeway traffic dropped about 70% in the area. And along with that, the ultrafine particles and PM2.5 dropped markedly. So what happened to health? In just that one day of decreased traffic, ER visits dropped 23% at UCLA and 13% at Mount Sinai, a little further away, and even 911 calls dropped. The same thing was seen in Atlanta years ago when traffic was stopped for the Olympics, when asthma admissions dropped markedly. So the health benefits will come very quickly. And in fact, the health benefits are so great that they may pay for themselves. This study from MIT said that cutting emissions can generate enough health benefits to offset the cost of transitioning to a clean energy economy. And in fact, if we transition by carbon pricing rather than regulations, the benefits are 10 times the cost. Putting that another way, in terms of price of carbon, the costs of a clean energy transition are less than $30 a ton, whereas the benefits are valued at over $200 per ton of CO2. Just here in the US, in the rest of the world, in Southeast Asia, especially where they burn so much coal, the benefits are even higher. So some people are actually calling this the biggest public health opportunity of the century, because transitioning to a low carbon economy can make us healthier and save money, not just from changes in energy production that we just talked about, but also changes in food systems as we move towards more plant-based diets and away from heavy meat production and methane producing ruminants. That will make us healthier because meat diets contribute a lot to chronic disease. And as we do more public transportation, active transport, that will also make us healthier. Just increasing our walking by 10 minutes, 5 days a week, can markedly decrease the risk of many of the chronic diseases that ail our society. So what do doctors say about this? Well, Rob gave you a preview. American doctors were kind of quiet on this subject till recently, but now they've sounded the alert. Doctors or medical societies representing over half the doctors in the country have come together in this medical society consortium to say that climate change is harming us Americans here and now, and that the harms will increase unless we act. And that the best way to stop those harms is to decrease the use of fossil fuels. And that changes in energy sources will bring immediate health benefits by decreasing air pollution. And to that point, I need to also point out that if we decrease CO2 through something like carbon capture and storage, that will help the climate issue, but it won't have the same health benefits as moving away from fossil fuel as a primary energy source. And lastly, the sooner we take action, the more harm we can prevent. So we know we need to transition as quickly as possible. How do we do that? Well, again, some medical societies have spoken out about this. The Lancet Commission, which is the premier medical organization globally rather than in just the US, has spoken very strongly about this and said that the most powerful instrument to inoculate human health against the risk of climate change is for governments to introduce strong and sustained carbon pricing. So I won't say that all doctors are necessarily on board with this, but more and more are coming to this conclusion that doctors should be promoting this policy. And so now we can revisit this health and message box that Dr. Byron took us through at the beginning. So we know climate change is bad for our health. It's affecting us here and now in the US. That some people will be harmed more than others, but we're all at risk. That unless we take action, the harms will get much worse, but that we have solutions that will make us healthier, but we need to accelerate the inevitable transition to clean, renewable energy. And I would add that to accelerate that decarbonization, there should be effective carbon pricing, including the health effects of air pollution. That has to be added to the social cost of carbon. So now I would invite all of you to break out into the chat rooms and choose one of these messages and see if you can formulate something that will help you to communicate to other people in your neighborhood, to friends, to your legislatures. And I hope some of you will share what you come up with when we come back from the breakout rooms. We actually have a handout that will be available on the site too, called Fossil Fuels and Climate Change, What Do Doctors Say? And that includes the key points about the Medical Society Consortium, the key climate change impacts, the key fossil fuel impacts, and the health costs, all on one page. And then the back includes the references and key resources. So I've found that useful when presenting to legislators, because they'll say, well, where did you get this information? Is it real? And so that's a nice, you know, front and backside handout that you can use for either educating your legislators, your medical professionals, or even in tabling. And for anyone who really wants the real details, there's a detailed background for human health consequences of fossil and fossil fuel costs that goes into much, much more detail about this. I would mention that we spent a lot of time trying to reconcile the REMI study and the lives saved and health costs with what we were reading in the literature, because the data is all over the place and it's a little bit complicated. That's in that detailed background study. But the REMI study markedly underestimates the health benefits, partly because it's only a 50% clean energy. And I was really pleased to hear Governor Schwarzenegger give a talk on this in the last couple months, saying 200,000 lives saved. So I'm pretty solid on that number.
It's on the health team website. You'll see more information. The resources are listed at the end of the slides tonight that you can access. Lastly, we'd like to point out that if people are interested in having a physician or other healthcare professional work with your group, you're welcome to contact the members of the health team, either myself, Dr. Mahoney, Dr. Lori Byron, my wife, and we will make every effort to get somebody in contact with you. We don't have members everywhere. We're getting more, but we'll sure try and do that, because sometimes it helps to have a physician or a nurse or a nurse practitioner or a respiratory therapist or other in your meetings with you with local organizations or members of Congress. So if we can help, please let us know.
Yeah, thank you so much. At this point, I know we've reached the top of the hour, and these slides here show how to join the group and reach out. But you can also get in touch with both Cynthia and Rob tonight with their emails provided here. So at this point, if you have questions on my end for any other suggestions on how to improve Citizens Climate University or any other ideas for lessons, feel free to reach out to me. My email is brett@citizensclimate.org. But we'd like to always close. Again, here's where to find it on tomorrow. It'll drop here by the middle of the day under recent training. But we want to close by thanking all of you. You are the backbone and the whole motivation behind why CCL is successful. Without your efforts and hard work in the communities where you live, work, and play, none of this transformation that we so desperately need would be possible. So thank you for your time tonight. I'm going to unmute all lines, and we wish you a wonderful rest of your week.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.